E-12 Education Committee will come to order. And this morning, we have some competition. The Finance Committee's meeting, and a number of members are doing some dual committee meetings. But we, I'm sure we'll be getting some of those members as that committee finishes. But this morning, we have the Legislative Auditor's Report on QComp, which was done by this last year, and I believe just finished. And that's the blue report that you have in your packets. And of course, QComp is a program that the governor initiated years ago, and it's also one that he's talked about in his budget to expand, and one that we've had quite a bit of legislative involvement in over the years, just trying to assess the success of the program, and then also a lot of interest in the fact that not all of the school districts across the state are actually participating in QComp. And one of the concerns I've always brought up is that it actually is part of the general education statute, comes under the general education statute. And we've never really had a program that is in the general education statute that is doesn't really apply to all the districts. And so that's anyway, to this morning we have the presentation by the legislative auditor and Mr. Nobles. Would you like to open it up?
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Judy Randall, who is the manager of our evaluation of QComp. And, Mr. Chairman, I want to start by thanking you for this opportunity to release and present to your committee our report. I think we all understand that QComp is controversial, and in this legislative session, legislators, and particularly members of this committee, will face important and difficult decisions about the program's future. Opinions about QComp are divided. There are strong supporters and there are strong opponents. Some policymakers, including the governor, officials at the Department of Education, and probably some legislators, have concluded that QComp is an effective mechanism of reform and think it should be implemented statewide. Others do not like QComp for a variety of reasons and think the program should be ended sooner rather than later. Most people have opinions somewhere in between. They see some positive and reasonable ideas in QComp, but they also see a complex process required to participate, and they see added costs. For them, the questions remain: is QComp working? Is it worth the cost, $49 million in the current fiscal year? Why are, as you just questioned, Mr. Chairman, why are so many school districts and charter schools unwilling to participate? Are they simply protecting the status quo and unwilling to change? Or are there significant problems with QComp? These people are still looking for answers and information, and we hope that our report will help them. Our report will answer who is participating and who is not and why. We will tell you what teachers and administrators think of QComp, both those who are participating and those who are not. Our report will give you OLA's assessment of how the Department of Education has fulfilled its responsibilities to implement and monitor QComp. And finally, our report will explain why there is no answer currently to what some people consider the ultimate question: is QComp improving state student performance? But we want to focus for now on what we do know and what we can answer, and for that I want to turn to Judy Randall to make a presentation of our report. And again, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Judy Randall, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'm pleased to be here today to talk with you about our evaluation on QComp. Before I get started, I'd like to acknowledge David Kirchner and Mary Robinson, seated here behind me, and thank them for all their work on the evaluation. I'm going to talk about three key findings today during the presentation. The first is that QComp's effect on student achievement cannot be adequately measured using existing data. The second is that the Department of Education's application review process has several weaknesses, and probably the most notable one is that applicants have been held to different standards depending on when they applied to the program. And then the third finding I'm going to talk about is that not all participants are subject to regular oversight by the department. Before I go through each of those findings, however, I'm going to just back up and give everyone a little refresher on QComp. QComp was created in 2005 during the special legislative session, and the first participants, which are charter schools and school districts, began the program in fall of 2005. So the legislature passed the law in midsummer 2005, and a couple months later, the first school districts and charter schools joined the program. QComp is voluntary. Administrators and teachers come together, jointly prepare an application, submit it, and implement the program. Now, there's a lot of attention when people talk about QComp on the alternative compensation aspects of QComp, but there's actually five components of QComp, and professional development is a big piece of that. I'm going to talk about each of those five components briefly. So the first one is career advancement opportunities for teachers. The idea in QComp is that teachers have advancement opportunities, but they retain a presence in the classroom. So opportunities such as being a mentor or a lead teacher of a team of teachers or conducting evaluations of other teachers in their classrooms. The next component is professional development, and QComp professional development must take place on-site and during the school day. So it's not a one-day workshop at a conference center. Instead, it's more embedded in the school day and on an ongoing basis. The third component is teacher evaluation. And under QComp, all teachers, probationary and tenured teachers, are subject to multiple evaluations every year. So the Department of Education requires every teacher in a QComp school to be evaluated 3 times each year. The next component, now we're getting to the performance-based pay. By law in QComp, 60% of a teacher's salary increase must be tied to these three factors: school-wide student achievement on a standardized assessment is measured against annual goals. Other measures of student achievement, this may be a portfolio work or grades of a teacher's own students, and then also their teacher evaluations. So 60% of the salary increase must be tied to these three factors. And then the fifth component is an alternative salary schedule. So QComp school districts must reform steps and lanes, and a teacher cannot receive a salary increase solely for additional years of experience. Let me talk briefly now about how QComp is funded. Charter schools and school districts that participate in the program are eligible to receive an additional up to $260 per pupil. Again, this is additional funding. And this is a mix of state and local funding. Currently, the state provides $190 per pupil, and then the local school districts can levy an additional $70 if they choose. If they choose to not levy the funding, they're still eligible for the full $190 coming from the state. Charter schools, since they are not able to levy local funds, they are eligible for additional state funding, and last year it was about $250 per pupil for charter schools. In fiscal year 2009, as Mr. Noble stated, the state is estimated to spend $49 million on QComp, and this is about 80% of the funding that the legislature has authorized. Now, this $49 million is going to 72 school districts and charter schools across the state. 13% of school districts, that's 44 school districts, and 28 charter schools, or 18% of charter schools, currently participate in the program. And the largest concentration of participants is in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And the map here kind of shows where the school districts and charter schools are located. The darker red school districts are the larger school districts with over 5,000 students enrolled. The pinker color are the medium-sized school districts with student enrollment of 1,500 to 5,000 students. And then the grayish-white school districts are small school districts with under 1,500 students. The yellow dots, not sure how clearly you can see that, the yellow dots up there are the charter schools. So you can see that participation is really dominated by the larger school districts in the metropolitan area. One of the things that we did in our evaluation was send out a questionnaire to all school districts and charter schools in the state, regardless of whether they participate in the program. And one of the questions we asked those who don't participate in the program is, why aren't you participating in the program? $260 per pupil is a significant amount of funding, and why aren't you participating? So we heard a couple of different reasons that floated up to the top from the respondents. The biggest answer we heard was teacher reluctance. Now, we should note that this was superintendents and charter school directors who were responding to the questionnaire, but they cited teacher reluctance, especially in the school districts, as the largest barrier to participation, either teacher opposition to the program or teacher indifference to the program. We also heard from a number of school districts and charter schools that they were concerned that the funding was going to, whether or not the funding would continue. School districts and charter schools not in the program are worried that the legislature is not going to continue QCOMP funding. We also heard this concern from charter schools and school districts that are in the program. They were worried either that the funding wasn't going to continue or that the funding was going to significantly shift and put more of a burden on local dollars. Finally, we heard some special concerns from smaller school districts that were concerned about the time commitment and resources needed to participate in the program. As I'll get into in a little bit, putting together a program, applying to the program, and implementing a program takes a significant amount of resources. And we heard from a number of smaller districts that they simply didn't have the resources to devote to it. One of the we visited 20 school districts and charter schools across the state, and one of the school districts we visited was a small one in south central Minnesota. And they're participating in the program, but they said that the teachers and administrators that put together their plan did so on weekends and evenings to put together the plan. And if they had had to pay those staff to put together the plan, they wouldn't have been able to do it. So that's some reasons why folks aren't in the program. It's kind of the end of the overview. I'm going to move now to talk about each of those key findings I mentioned in the beginning. The first one was that the effect of QCOMP on student achievement can't be measured with existing data. And there's a number of reasons for this. First, as I mentioned, the program's relatively new. It's only been in place for 3 full years. And as we've also discussed, there's few participants. Again, only 72 school districts and charter schools in total, but only 11 school districts and charter schools that have been in the program for 3 full years. Additionally, student achievement data are limited. The state is not quite where it needs to be yet regarding capturing student achievement, growth in student achievement. So that data are not available to really measure the effects of QCOMP. Finally, there's a lot of things happening in a school. QCOMP is but one initiative in a school. To disentangle the effects of QCOMP from all the other initiatives that happen, be it class size reduction, IB programs, introducing a new curriculum, there's a lot of things happening in a school. To isolate the effects of QCOMP, we think, can't be done, especially with the current data. Also, I'll note that QCOMP is voluntary in nature. So the school districts and charter schools that have chosen to participate in QCOMP are likely significantly different than the school districts and charter schools that have chosen to not yet participate in QCOMP. Those that have chosen to participate likely think that QCOMP makes sense for them. So it's not clear that even if we were able to identify effects of QCOMP, that those effects would be transferable to other school districts and charter schools in the state. So I want to add also that we looked at the national research on similar types of programs that combine professional development and teacher performance pay. There are a couple of somewhat similar programs in other school districts across the country, and the national research was largely inconclusive about the effects of those programs on student achievement. Although we couldn't statistically measure the effects of QCOMP on student achievement, we did want to talk to people about what they felt the effects of QCOMP were. So in addition to the survey that we sent to charter schools and school districts, we also sent a survey to a sample of teachers across the country, across the country, across the state. And two big things came out. First was that, in general, administrators are more positive than teachers about the program. And secondly, both administrators and teachers are more positive about the professional development aspects of QCOM than the performance pay aspects of QCOM. So let's talk about that a little bit. First, regarding the effects of QCOM. Again, we couldn't measure those statistically, but we did ask administrators and teachers a number of questions. So the first one here is the extent to which they agree or disagree that QCOM will lead to increases in students' performance on standardized tests at their school. This was asked of teachers and administrators in QCOM schools. And you can see there's quite a difference there between the perceptions of administrators and teachers. 81% of administrators agreed or strongly agreed that QCOM will lead to increases in students' performance on standardized tests, while one-third of teachers agreed or strongly agreed with that statement, and 30% of teachers disagreed or strongly disagreed with that statement. And we also asked them about the effects of QCOM on their teaching. So we asked the extent to which they agree or disagree that QCOM has improved classroom teaching at their school. And the administrators had largely similar results, but the teachers were more positive on this point. So 43% of teachers agreed or strongly agreed that QCOM has improved teaching at their school. Now, in addition to looking at these the big effects of QCOM, we also looked more in depth at how they feel about the different components of QCOM. So in particular, we asked about professional development. And we asked the extent to which they agree or disagree that QCOM has improved professional development in their school. And here you can see 90% of teachers and over half, 90% of administrators and over half of teachers agreed or strongly agreed that QCOM has improved professional development in their school. When we asked them about the effects of QCOM on performance pay or the effects of the performance pay aspects, they weren't quite as positive. Here, the question is worded a little differently, so just take note of that. This is, what effect has linking teacher pay to students' standardized test scores had on your school district or charter school? And here you can see that over half of teachers thought that linking teacher pay to test scores had a negative or strongly negative effect on their school. Administrators were more mixed. 39% thought it had a positive or strongly positive effect, and about a third were neutral on that point. Now, when we asked about linking teacher pay to performance evaluations, so the first point is linking teacher pay to test scores. The second one is linking teacher pay to a teacher's performance evaluation. Teachers were more favorable with that. A third of teachers thought that linking teacher pay to performance evaluations had a positive or strongly positive effect, and 30% thought it had a negative effect. Administrators also were more positive on this point. 58% thought that linking teacher pay to performance evaluations of teachers had a positive or strongly positive effect. I know I've just kind of thrown a lot of numbers at you. I was going to move on from this point. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to take questions on this or if you want me just to keep going forward.
Why don't we just see if there's any questions that members have, and then we'll can move on. Senator Hand?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just have a question about the data here that you presented. And
sure.
The your data is showing a fairly strong positive reaction to the effect of QCOM on teaching, improving classroom teaching, and improving staff development or professional development. And we have heard a lot about the relationship between better teaching and improved performance in the classroom. Is it a little bit odd to see a fairly strong agreement with that idea that the development and the but yet when the question is asked about whether that has had an effect on classroom performance, there seems to be a negative,
sure,
at least with respect to the teachers. Does that suggest that there is not a relationship between staff development and improved performance? Was that a valid conclusion to draw from this? I mean, as tenuous as that might be.
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand. Well, first, I would just emphasize that these are teachers' and administrators' perceptions of reality. You know, so whether or not it's true is a different question. You know, I think the research would say that certainly teacher performance impacts student achievement, but I think a lot of factors affect student achievement. And so what I think that these results demonstrate, and, you know, we talked to groups of teachers and we did all these site visits. So based on all that information, what I think this demonstrates is that teachers think the professional development aspects of QCOM can help them with what they're doing in the classroom, but that doesn't necessarily directly translate to a student's test score. Again, there's lots of factors in student test score. The teachers can control the part that they can control, but they can't control all of the aspects that go into student achievement.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand.
Just another question, Ms. Randall. Going back to earlier in your presentation, you're talking about the components that QComp requires, and that 60% of the performance-based pay had to be tied to three factors. One of them was student achievement, other measures of achievement, and the third one was evaluations. Was there a consistency in the way these QComp programs were constructed? In other words, would it be fair to say that of the 60% salary increase, one-third related to achievement, one-third to evaluation? Is that how it broke down, or were there disproportionate linkages between these three factors and the pay increase that was performance-related? In other words, if overwhelming majority of the performance pay were based to student achievement, for example, that might suggest something other than if it was a very small percentage. Was there any data on what that makeup of and the school districts you looked at?
Ms. Randall?
Mr. Chair, Senator Han, if I can direct you to page 28 in the report, one of the things we did in our evaluation was go through all of the approved, well, we went through all of the applications and all of the approved QComp plans. And on page 28, it shows a kind of a snapshot of how the participants allocate that performance-based award. On average, about 50% of the performance-based award is tied to teacher evaluations, and about 20% is tied to school-wide achievement gains, and then the other measures of student achievement. Now, it does vary by participant. So there was one charter school, I believe, that tied about 50% of its performance-based pay to school-wide achievement. That was an exception rather than the norm. The norm was to tie about 50% or so to the evaluation, and then a smaller percentage to the school-wide, to the test scores.
And then, Mr. Chairman, and just a comment, maybe you
Senator
could.
It
would seem from that the half or maybe more of the performance pay was related to evaluations, pretty mm-hmm. strong, favorable on evaluations. If there had been a stronger percentage of the compensation based on achievement, would that perhaps have, I mean, I'm just speculating, if you've got the incentives lined up against evaluations and so forth, and that seems to be viewed favorably, I guess my question is the relationship between the structure of the compensation and the things that are viewed favorably?
Ms. Randall?
Mr. Chair, Senator Han, I guess it's a little bit of a chicken and egg conversation, perhaps, but I don't think so. I think the reason why the performance-based pay is allocated the way it is because that is a locally decided, negotiated thing, and so that is what people were more comfortable with. I think if a higher percentage had been allocated, a higher percentage of the performance-based pay were linked to the test scores, I mean, I guess that would show a local willingness to do that, but I think generally the feedback we were getting from our questionnaire and talking to people is that really is not viewed as favorably, that linkage to the test scores.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first reaction was very similar to Senator Hand's, and I guess rather than repeat or going down that, I think that this is something that we ought to take a deeper look at. You know, we have had set-asides for staff development, and that's been deemed to be very important. And yet, I'd like to know why the participants here believe that the staff development aspect of this program has been, you know, so strong. And but I think we should try to understand if they believe that it has improved their ability to teach. We place a lot of stock in the fact of having a quality teacher before the students. And if the result isn't improved student performance, What am I missing here? If improved teaching, improved staff development, and that's quality, isn't bringing about the results, then I think we need to take a little deeper look. And I would love to, I hope we could have some time and maybe bring in some people that would be in a position to discuss that a bit more as to what is going on here that's positive and why is there that disconnect. Now, you mentioned that there are other things that are factors, and maybe it is that they've chosen just test scores, or maybe there's some other measures in terms of student achievement that, you know, I know that that's what we look at is the, you said standardized test scores, but whether it's the MCAs or whatever, I would like to know more. And so that's, I don't expect the auditor to answer those. I think you've given some good responses to it, but I think that's an area that, that we need to understand better.
Ms. Randall?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, if I could just respond. We spoke with a number of folks to learn more about what they liked, why they thought the professional development was working, and the thing we really heard was the collaboration and cooperation among teachers with the administration, but also just among the teachers. And having the professional development that's really relevant to what they're doing in their classroom, the fact that they had more control perhaps over what that professional development, the subject of the professional development, and then working together to learn more about, you know, how teacher X did it in this classroom and what worked and didn't work. I think that's a lot of what we heard in terms of what they liked. Of course, they should come in and say for themselves what they liked, but that's some of the information that we heard. And also I would just say we don't know that it hasn't had an effect on student achievement. We don't know either way. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Just to that point, my understanding was that the set-aside is also determined by the teachers. So what's the ingredient that makes, you know, would they not be collaborative in what they decided and focus the effort towards student achievement? Or we're dealing with that issue from a finance standpoint as well as the QComp, and I think it would merit some further discussion. And thanks for your insights that you've given to us.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I would just add that you're right, that certainly the professional development set-aside does already kind of lead down this path. And we did speak with a number of folks and hear on the questionnaire that a number of them were already implementing some of this type of professional development. So a lot of them were already establishing professional learning communities, which are these teacher teams, or embedding it more in their day and having it be more relevant prior to QComp. And so, you know, for some school districts and charter schools, QComp was kind of the impetus to do this. And for some of them, they were already doing it. And so now they got the funding from QComp. Some of them were already doing it, but QComp helped them kind of bring it to another level. But I think your questions are all extremely valid.
Mr. Chairman, could I just add one point?
Mr.
Because I think it links to our point that it's difficult at this point. We say not possible to tell you what impact QComp is having on student achievement. And I think that we are always looking for that one thing, whether it's reduction in class size, QComp, and we're trying to single out the one thing that we can control and do that will impact student achievement. I think we probably need to start reframing the question as what combination of factors need to be present, not just one. But I think we all are far enough down the road with in dealing with education and trying to achieve good student performance that we know it's many things. And so it produces a real problem for researchers, evaluators, administrators to try to come to you and tell you that it all comes down to one thing, QComp, class size, early childhood education, and a lot of other things. So, Mr. Chairman, maybe we'll get back to Ms. Randall with the rest of the presentation.
We still have a few more questions here. Senator Terezre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this is a question, but I would like to get back to the commissioner's presentation when we have the commissioner in front of us, because I think that these questions we're raising right now really are for the department, in a sense that when you talk about the reason we are investing in QComp and the reason the governor has put this as a an important project, an important aspect of his new direction for the department, and the budget will pay for it. I think the question for us is, why this issue? Because we are talking about this question in here, which is how to improve test scores and performance. We're not talking about teacher performance, and we're not talking about, now, obviously there is a relationship, there is a link, but just like Mr. Noble said, there's just, I don't know if the Department of Education has made an argument for making this the issue. And I think that's what I would like to hear. So the questions that we have are so much about this, and so we need to hear from them as to why this is the top priority and why do we need to embark into a process of devoting so many resources to this particular issue and not other issues, and what the science is telling us about these other aspects of education that need to be looked at.
We will have an opportunity to hear from the commissioner after the presentation. And so, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, with regard to student performance, it seems to me that one of the problems is that we don't yet have good consistent testing with regard to growth. So can you talk a little bit about, in your research and in your findings, were the test scores that were looked at, the MCA-type test scores, was there any consistency around using? I know some of our school districts do use the growth model testing. They choose to do that on an individual basis. Was that part of what was looked at when we looked at student performance?
Ms. Mandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff. We did not do analysis including student test scores and QComp or not QComp. We felt that it was really not prudent to do so at this time because, as you mentioned and as I have mentioned, the student growth data are not there. Now, you're absolutely correct. Some of the school districts in particular use the NWEA test, which would measure growth, but we don't have that on a statewide basis. And then you also run into all the other problems that I mentioned about evaluating the effects of QComp. Really what, I mean, short of doing a controlled experiment, you know, and deciding who gets to do QComp and who doesn't and holding them in place and then evaluating them, you really have to kind of find a school district that's in QComp and a school district that's not in QComp that had everything else the same except that they were in QComp or not. And needless to say that that wasn't possible.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
I think that is a very important point because as we look at what's working about QComp, it looks like the findings reflect what I know my districts have said, which is the most important thing about QComp is it's changed the whole culture of teaching so that there's an excitement and there's a culture around collaboration. And it's different than the set-aside because oftentimes in school districts, the set-aside is going to these in-services that aren't about being in the classroom with kids. And it seems like your research underscores the importance of having the development and the teaching time in the classroom and the mentorship and the importance of the mentorship to just one's fulfillment in their career. And so I think that's very different than looking at student achievement. And that's actually why I'm so concerned with the governor's budget proposal about putting the bonus in place, because I think that's the area we have the least amount of knowledge and data with regard to how can you really assign the link between teaching in the classroom and performance when we don't yet have a way to measure growth. And so you cannot expect to impact a teacher's ability in the classroom if you can't even see on a day-to-day is there growth. So that's a comment.
Good statement. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, I was talking to a teacher from a district last week that had rejected QComp, and I asked what perception the teachers' union had that they didn't vote for it. And he said that they believe that it will eliminate more collaboration and make teachers too competitive with each other. And you just indicated something earlier that you found that it brought about more collaboration. Could you just expound on that a little bit? And did you find any of the opposite of too much competition as they seek these merit pay increases?
Sure. Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I think we heard concerns about the competition aspect from school districts and charter schools that weren't in the program. And I think that that was some of the fears some teachers had prior to joining. But then once they entered the program, we really heard a lot of positive things about how it brought people working together and that it wasn't competitive. It didn't feel like it was pitting people against each other. Now, we didn't speak to everybody, and we didn't hear from every teacher. So, you know, I'm sure that you could probably find somebody with a different view. But we really heard things in favor of the cooperation and collaboration.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Randall?
Shall I continue?
Yeah, okay. You want to go on?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now I'm going to switch gears pretty dramatically, I think, to now talking about the administration of the program. And the next key finding that I had mentioned was regarding the application process and how there were some weaknesses that we found. So first, let me just remind you how the application process works. First, an interested school district or charter school submits an application to the Department of Education. Applications can be submitted at any time during the year. By law, the Department of Education must convene a review committee with teachers and administrators within 30 days of receiving the application. So if they receive the application June 15th or December 15th, they've got 30 days to pull together a group of teachers and administrators. The review committee reviews the application, ultimately makes a recommendation to the commissioner of the Department of Education, and the commissioner is the one who makes the final approval or rejection decision. We had a couple of findings regarding this process. The first one is that applicants have been held to different standards depending on when they apply to the program. As I mentioned way in the beginning, the law was passed midsummer of 2005, and just a couple of months later, the first school districts and charter schools entered the program. So the department kind of had to get up to speed along with everybody else. So over the past 3 years, the department has changed its standards for entering the program as it's gotten more experience with the program. It's gotten more, the standards have gotten more stringent. So what's happened is an early entrant to the program, somebody who applied in 2005, was held to weaker standards than current applicants are. So if I were to apply today and take the exact same application of some of the 2005 applicants, copy it and submit it, I would get rejected, which means I wouldn't get $260 per pupil, but that other district would continue to receive it and had been receiving it all along. So we have some recommendations on that point. The second point is that the application reviewers, those teachers and administrators that come to review the application, are often unprepared or inconsistent. We sat in on several application review sessions over the course of the summer and saw several application reviewers who either hadn't read the application, didn't receive the materials until they got there, or missed information in the application. Also, different application reviewers focused in on different things. So when Bob was there, they always reviewed the budget and made sure the budget lined up with, you know, the QCOMP plan. But when Bob wasn't there, the budget didn't necessarily get the attention it needed. And finally, the 30-day timeline is problematic for reviewing the applications. Again, the law requires the department to review it, to convene this committee and review the application within 30 days of receipt. Again, it doesn't matter when that application came in. So if it's right before the winter break, that 30-day timeline still applies. We think that timeline contributes to some of the lack of preparation among the readers. Also, it makes it quite difficult for the department to make any changes to the application standards because a new application could land on their desk at any point. So we had a number of recommendations to address the application process. The first set are for the legislature. We think the legislature should remove the requirement to have the external application reviewers. Again, they were unprepared and often inconsistent, and we think that the Department of Education staff instead should be the ones responsible for reviewing the application and making the decision. As I mentioned, it's ultimately the commissioner of the department who makes the approval decision anyways. We think having department staff do it would make it be much more consistent and ensure more preparation. We also think the legislature should remove the 30-day timeline in law. Again, that's led to some of the problems we witnessed. And instead, we think the legislature should require the department to establish two or three specific deadlines throughout the year, whether it's quarterly or, you know, two or three times a year, and say, you know, we'll accept applications April 15th and July 15th. I'm making it up. And here's, you know, the process that will happen then if you submit an application by that point. I should note that to receive the funding in QComp, you need to have the program in place and implemented by October 1st of a school year. So if an application lands on the department's doorstep November 15th, they can't implement for, you know, 11 months anyway. So to have this 30-day timeline in place has really put on a lot of pressure to the department and the whole process. We also make a recommendation to the department here that they need to hold all QComp participants to the same standards. What this means is they need to set up a process where they look back at the current participants and ensure that they're complying with the current standards. We view this as a pretty doable process. They can work with the early entrants to kind of bring them up to the current standards, and we think that this would be pretty easily worked out between the districts and the department. We also looked at the ongoing oversight of the participants and found that not all of the participants are subject to regular oversight by the department. The department uses its annual program reviews as its primary mechanism for oversight, and this is a combination of a document review and a peer site visit. And the program reviews have three levels. The first level is the most intensive, a lot of site visits, a lot of document review. Once a participant meets all the expectations of that first level, they move to the second level, which isn't as intense. Once they meet all the expectations of the second level, they move to the third level. When you're at the third level, you can choose how much oversight you want. You can either have just the site visit, you can have just the document review, or you can choose to have nothing. And in 2008, all of the participants that were at level three all chose nothing. See that you saw where that was going. And so we had some issues with that. Also, the school districts, there's one school district, the Minneapolis School District, and one charter school that uses TAP, the Teacher Advancement Program, as its form of QComp. And under TAP, the national nonprofit organization that oversees TAP, they come and they do monitoring and oversight of the TAP participants. And the Department of Education has accepted that oversight in lieu of their own. However, the TAP organization is making sure that these participants are good TAP schools. They're not making sure they're good QComp schools or complying with QComp law. So our recommendation here is pretty straightforward. We recommend that the department conduct periodic program reviews of all its participants. Now, for those participants that have been in the program for 3 years that are doing really well, they don't necessarily need to have an annual program review, but we do think the department should have some oversight presence on a periodic basis, like every 3 years or so.
Excuse me, Senator Salzman.
Well, I can wait until she's done, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. So, thank you.
Ms. Randall.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm almost done. All I was going to say left is that we have a number of other recommendations and findings in the report regarding the oversight, particularly annual reports and the goal-setting process, and I'd be happy to entertain questions on those, but that's the end of the – oh, that's not the end. Just a real recap. I forgot. Sorry. But this is nothing new. It's the recap on our findings. The effects on student achievement can't be adequately measured using existing data. The application review process has some weaknesses, and not all participants are subject to regular oversight. Now that's really the end, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Salzman.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that my questions and comments really focus on all of these things put together as a package, and I am somewhat troubled that we don't have data that would point to this significant investment that it is producing higher student achievement. And as Senator Torres-Ray said, this is about student achievement. That's the purpose of this. And some of that, you know, concern is that when we have very limited resources, that we need to target our dollars to programs that we do work, do work. And that kind of goes to your point of the entanglement of programs, that when you look at this, and I appreciate that, you know, we need to really look at the program in more depth, but we do know programs that work, and in those schools that maybe are implementing those, we saw this with the Reading First, that report that came out, which said that Reading Forest didn't work, and then what they later said was that's because other schools were also taking the best practices, and so schools they were comparing it to were doing the same kind of things. So to kind of, I guess, summarize here, it's that some of the things that what you've said really, really talked about staff development and the embedded staff development. And last year or the year before, I introduced Senate File 2094, which was about staff development, and I worked with the department. I don't think we ever heard the bill because it was a little controversial with some. About school districts aligning staff development with district and school site staff development plans, looking at student achievement, embedding training, that staff development should not be a you go to a conference and come back, but that you really look at staff development as problem solving. Some of the schools that are implementing RTI see this as very effective, of that it's really problem solving. It's teachers working together. So my concern, and I think if you could speak to this a little bit more, is that some of, at least one of my districts said to me recently, a school that has QComp very close to us is doing exactly what we're doing now, but they're getting money and we're not. And that's concerning because, you know, should we be paying schools additional dollars for things that they could be doing without them? Because QComp is not putting one more teacher in a classroom. So if you could speak a little bit more to the different, you know, do you have any data that might reflect more on how the department might be able to take what it's learned so that if schools that are on it and have plans that were very different, should we ask them to change their plans so that we really are using best practices?
Ms. Randall.
I sort of really covered a lot of things there, but I tried to ask a question at the end.
thank you.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman. I'll do my best. I think, first of all, it'd probably be best to ask the department about their initiatives in terms of looking within QComp and identifying best practices. But I will agree that we heard from folks that they were already doing a lot of the pieces of QComp, either before they did QComp, or that's why they're still not in QComp, because they didn't see that they needed to do the paperwork aspects of QComp to achieve what they wanted to achieve on student development. But we did hear the other side of it, too. I mean, I think there's enough stories out there to go around, frankly. We also heard from a number of superintendents that we visited who are in QComp who said, this has been great. This has changed what we're doing. If the funding goes away, we're still doing it because it's so important, and we'll figure out a way to do it without the funding. We also met with superintendents who said, if the funding goes away, we're stopping this immediately because we can't afford to do it without the funding. So, you know, I know that's not a great answer, but the point is that there's lots of different stories out there. And I think it's definitely true that a number of school districts are doing this type of embedded, ongoing, relevant professional development without QComp. The district that you mentioned that's in your area, you know, I don't know who they are and I don't know what they're doing, but I don't know that they're doing all of the things of QComp, you know, and I think that's, I would be surprised to hear if they were doing the performance pay or had reformed their salary schedule, because what we heard from school districts that were doing parts of QComp, they were doing the professional development parts of QComp, but not necessarily the pay aspects of QComp.
Senator Saltzman.
So perhaps to clarify that, Mr. Chair, what I think my district was saying is that we're doing many of these embedded staff development pieces, which is perhaps what's, you know, is part of the cost. Mm-hmm. But our teachers are not getting paid more because they're participating in it. And I think that's where there is some issues of we're doing this, our teachers are not getting paid more, and they also believe that they're seeing, you know, results from that in student achievement. So I go back to, again, just to like, you know, members, that when we have limited resources, is this the best use of dollars? Or are there other programs that, you know, I'm not seeing that are being refunded next year that we are seeing results for in terms of, you know, our RTI training with some of our reading initiatives, some of the things we'd like to see staff development in other areas. So I just pose that as things that we need to consider.
Okay. Senator Weaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for either Ms. Randall or Mr. Noble. The department provides report cards for the various schools with progress reports in this report, it seems the bottom line is incomplete, inconclusive. Is there any policy recommendation that would justify a statewide rollout of this program at this time, given the recommendations you've had?
Well,
Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chairman and members, that is the big question before you. We can give you some things that certainly we've thought about as we've heard the governor's proposal that we think you need to visit with the commissioner about, and that is exactly what is being proposed to be rolled out. Because as you've heard from us, and I think you'll hear from the department, QComp is really a program that is voluntary. And in fact, I think the department will reinforce, as I think our research reinforces, that that is one of the positive elements, people embracing this, both teachers, administrators, school boards, getting together and figuring out what they're comfortable with and implementing it. So if it turns into a mandate, I think it's questionable that that is still QComp. It still may be something you want to do, and you may be able to find elements from our experience that work, and you might want to say that those will now be required of all school districts, with or without the money. I think there are just a lot of policy choices here in terms of what works and how do you want to implement what works. I think we're pretty far away from knowing exactly what elements of QComp affect student performance. But even if we were to arrive at that point, I think you still face the policy choice. Should this be mandated statewide, or should it simply be a program that is put out there with incentives, largely money, and left voluntary? I'm not really going to answer your question. Just in case you missed that.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your answer, Mr. Nobles. Just a couple of comments, Ms. Randall. Going back to your slide where you talked about the application review process and that there were some issues that you pointed out, and I think rightly so, one of your points was that the applicants were held to different standards, and I wanted just to clarify that. I know you and I had a conversation about this last week, and I think the point is that at any given time, applicants were not held to different standards, but over time, as the understanding of the QComp program and the things required to implement it successfully changed, that there was a change in how that was reviewed by the department, and I view that largely as a good thing. I think we would all not be satisfied saying, well, we started out with a certain process that maybe wasn't so good, but the virtue was we stuck to it for 5 years, you know, and instead what the department has done is said, well, we need to get better. And there may be some merit in saying, let's go back then and take a look at some of the earlier applicants that were approved and evaluate their programs in light of what we know now, and I think that's a valid point. And then just more generally, the comment about doing the periodic reviews or looking back at reviews, and I think that is a valid point, and it's probably something that we should do with QComp. And Mr. Nobles, as you mentioned, I think one of the virtues of this is that it does have a voluntary component where you're offering an incentive, and the incentive is linked to certain changes that are expected in order to receive the money. And I think that we could all debate about whether we've got those incentives lined up properly. I would argue they probably need to be readjusted. But the point is that you have something out there that's voluntary in nature where you're putting an incentive out there and asking people to figure out how to get there. We get what we measure is kind of what the rule is in the process improvement world, and that you should reward those things that you measure. But just more generally, I think this says something about other things that we do. Everything we do in education is, at least in theory, tied to student achievement. But we have lots and lots of money that we give to districts for certain criteria that are not measured at all. And we did have a discussion in this committee about compensatory revenue, for example, that is multiple times more money than what we're talking about here, that we acknowledge there is no looking back to see what has been the effect on student performance for that investment of money. And so I certainly agree with the point you're making about QCOMP and the necessity to go back and review that, but I guess I would take that to be also a general comment on the other things that we fund, that we have set up, at least in some way, some criteria for those funds and say what is the effect of those funds on student achievement and looking back to try to evaluate that as well. So just some general observations here, but I do want to clarify the point about the application standards shifting over time, and I don't know if you have a comment, but...
Right.
Mr. Chair, Senator Han, if I could. Absolutely, Senator Han, and I appreciate the clarification. We think it's reasonable that the department has changed its standards over time as it's gotten more familiar with the program. And one of the expressions we heard a lot, and I'm probably going to mess it up, is they were building the plane in mid-flight, you know? And so absolutely, it makes sense for them to revise, and we would expect that and like that. And it's simply a matter of, as you said, just going back and bringing everybody up to the same level.
Senator Clark.
Thank you. There's lots of food for thought, that's for sure. I live in St. Cloud, and we're one of the districts that I think what the original carrot was, we were really struggling for money for good professional development. We'd already gone backwards on the mentoring opportunities, among other things, that our teachers and our administrators really valued. And so this was a good opportunity to, frankly, reinstate and maybe improve on some practices from before, which was good. So, you know, again, for us, that was kind of the carrot that got us in. And I've heard a lot, and almost all of our teachers are participating, probably close to all of them, and the learning circles are really important. A lot of those pieces are. And I think, you know, the perceptions that you were reporting in here probably anecdotally are related to what I'm hearing. But I guess my question is kind of getting past the perceptions of, you know, maybe the lesson learned of that is professional development that's tied towards what I'm doing in the classroom is something that's more valuable to me than some of the other stuff. So that's a good thing. When we're talking about actual results, going back to the results, are there things in your finding that you are actually finding are showing some results that perhaps we should be looking at that should be emphasized moving forward, or things that aren't producing any results that we should de-emphasize, or is it just too much everybody is doing their own thing? So we don't know.
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Clark. One thing I do want to just emphasize is that we didn't tie anything to results in terms of student achievement because, again, we didn't feel like we could do that. And then also I would say that really every program is quite unique. You know, they all have to fall into these five – they all have to have these five big components of – you know, teacher evaluation and professional development and performance-based pay, but how they do that is really a locally negotiated plan. The department might have some more information in terms of teasing out certain practices within QCOMP, you know, within a QCOMP program, and what seems to be working, again, depending on how you define working and not working. That was not necessarily something we focused on.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Clark.
So that I'm just trying to grapple. It ends up being a little bit hard if we're going forward looking at doing something statewide while we're still, it seems like, in the incubator phase. And certainly the department is going to give us some feedback about what they think could be teased up. But you all are independent. And so part of what we're trying to figure out, there's a variety of studies and looking at this from a variety of places, but as people who are coming into this, are we at a point where we can actually say that this is really a program, or is it money that's going locally that people are kind of figuring out what they think makes sense, and we can't draw, I mean, it would be helpful for us if we're going statewide that we're drawing conclusions in some way. Sure. Are we not quite there yet?
Ms. Randall?
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, I think we're not quite there yet, I guess is my answer. You know, again, it's very locally negotiated. And one of the things that we heard was where it's the most successful, and by that meaning people are happy with it and people think it's doing what they want it to be doing, is where you've got a lot of buy-in, where everybody has kind of agreed on it and agree on the purpose and agree on the direction of the professional development. And so, again, that makes it be very local. Now, that being said, you know, the department, I'm sure, will have some comments, and I appreciate that we're independent, so you want to hear from us. There are some consistencies, you know, there's some trends that a lot of the programs do. A lot of them have mentor teachers, and that seems to be working well. A lot of them have peer teacher observations, and people seem to like that and find that valuable. I think at the end of the day, though, it depends on what you want to achieve with the program. You know, if the goal is improve student achievement and only improve student achievement, I think we don't have the answers yet. We can't measure that. There are other goals stated in law, though. Improving professional development, recruitment and retention of teachers. So while I understand the emphasis on student achievement, certainly I think it depends also what else the state is hoping to get out of QCOMP.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, this will be my last one. So I have to admit what I'm kind of personally grappling with is because we do I know districts don't feel like they get a lot of local control sometimes, but we do really believe in people locally figure out what works for them. It almost sounds like as you're feeding it back is that we're finding out what people like or don't like, which I have to admit I'm not so sure. I'm a real big fan of putting in law, let's do things, you know, why tie their hands up? Let's hopefully districts would see together with their teachers, here are the things that seem like they're that we're liking. The question, though, is it good enough that we're liking something? What's the outcome? And I was looking at Senator Rummel before because the other question is how are we measuring achievement? You obviously already pointed out before you measure achievement in many ways. And so it would seem like that would be a challenge. But if we're embarking on this largely because at least it seems like from the governor's standpoint, and it's a very understandable one, is that we want to enhance and improve student achievement, and part of the way is through redesigning how we're doing performance-based pay, which I would argue that's not really what we're doing here. But if that's what we're doing, we really can't draw any conclusions yet from where we are if this is effective or not, because it's really all about perceptions and about whether people are liking what they're participating in. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, I would agree, but it sounds like you must have.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knowles.
Senator Clark, I think we're probably giving you a segue to hear from the commissioner, because I think a lot of the questions that you have about where we go next and do we accept the idea that this is ready to go statewide really hinge on what the commissioner is going to tell you, because obviously that was not our proposal. But I think from what I understand of the vision here from the governor, the commissioner, and others who support QCOMP, it is that we will use QCOMP to transform the culture, the organization of schools. Some of that will be through student teacher development. Some of that will be through tying elements of pay to performance in a variety of ways. And there is, I think, some amount of faith now that that will lead to better student achievement. The linkage, we say again, has not been demonstrated empirically. And frankly, although we always want to do evaluation and research, that is always going to be a very difficult thing to do. It is a tough piece of social science research just because of the complexity of the variables. I think we all understand that. So I think anybody that addresses you on this issue is going to tell you some of what we know, some of what we don't know, and then when you get to the point of what do we do next, it's going to be based to some degree on a little bit of faith that, again, if we can transform schools through QCOMP, that will ultimately lead to better student achievement. As you know, the department has had its own study done of QCOMP, and I think they, too, are looking at this question of what is the relationship between what we can accomplish with QCOMP and student achievement. And for now, they reach the same conclusion, that we can empirically draw the link between QCOMP and student achievement. But I think, as you've heard the commissioner address this question, they still have the faith that if we transform schools through QCOMP, someday, somehow, it will, in fact, have a positive impact on student achievement.
Mr. Chair, I know I said that was my last
question. I want to jump in here.
Yeah, try to figure out how it's transforming schools.
One of the things, and I certainly want to thank you for all the work that you've done in researching this, but I didn't hear as you were presenting a couple issues that have been on my mind for several years, and I don't think you touched on them today either. And it's really kind of centers around the whole inequality of this program and kind of the serious defect. If you look on page 52, you have that map that you showed, which was a very good presentation of, you know, where those districts are. And earlier in the committee meeting, I said, you know, this is anchored under the general education statute. And when you look across that picture of the state of Minnesota, you see an awful lot of area of the state that does not participate in QCOM. And those primarily are the rural, smaller school districts. And the question that comes through my mind is that what is going on? Is it just that rural independence? Or is there a defect in the program that those districts can't participate in what is perceived to be, or at least touted to be, the kind of the upgrading of our education system? And I, you know, I'd like to hear something on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We do talk a little bit in the report about the challenges particular to small school districts. The application process, putting together a program, developing the application, implementing the program, is quite resource intensive. We heard from a number of different school districts and charter schools about the hours and months and staff hours that were put into developing an application. And definitely the smaller school districts are underrepresented. Only 4% of the small school districts, those with under 1,500 students enrolled, are participating in QCOM. So I agree, there's something there. And again, we heard this concern about the resources. We have a recommendation in the report. It's on page 57, and it's talking about considering and promoting the use of some type of regional or cooperative QCOM program. We didn't flesh out all the details of this in our report, but we think there are certainly some areas where districts could work together to develop at least aspects of their QCOM program. I mean, I think they would still be under their own salary schedule and possibly under their own performance-based pay, but there should be a way perhaps to share resources regarding teacher evaluation and maybe some of the professional development. I mean, it would still have to take place on-site and during the school day, but maybe some small districts could share some of those resources. So it's something where we agree that there seems to be some particular barrier for the smaller school districts to participate, and we think the state and the department and the smaller districts need to start thinking creatively about ways to work together to implement the program if they're interested.
Can you expand on what those barriers might be to small school districts? You know, I just sketched out a proposal for, you know, a school district of 250 students, which is small. It's not a large school. But if you use the 2% set aside for staff development, that comes to about $25,000. And, you know, when you think about it, is how much can you do for $25,000 for a whole staff of faculty? That's what they have available to them now. Those districts that are in QComp have $363 per pupil. So it's a significant amount more. And I'm not saying that small schools don't provide an excellent education opportunity. I think their graduation rates are among the best in the state. But I don't think, I realize on this committee we have two urban members and four rural members, and the rest of you are suburban members. So
so be careful.
Yes, the chair walks very, very gingerly down the line. But I was in a discussion this morning about the inequality between rural funding and urban funding or suburban funding. And members are not too pleased. And here's an example that I'm just pointing out, where this is a program that now the governor wants to apply it statewide, but maybe there's no way for us to get into it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, one point I'll add is that a district doesn't receive the funding until they're implementing and in the program. So they don't receive any funding for preparing the program, developing the application for the program. And we don't spend a lot of time in the report on the smaller school districts, but on pages 56 and 57, we do discuss it a little bit. And it does outline some of the resources needed that we heard through our questionnaire. So, I mean, I can just read here on page 57, an administrator, I'm kind of at the top paragraph there. An administrator from a large metropolitan area district wrote, a committee composed of 14 representatives met semi-monthly, three-hour meetings from September through December. In addition, two staff members worked 10 hours a week to develop the plan. So that's a lot of resources to develop a QCOMP application, and that district wasn't receiving funding for it. You know, they don't receive the funding until after they're already in the program. So I do think that it's resource intensive, and for smaller school districts, especially those that have a part-time superintendent or a part-time principal, there's just not as many resources available. So I agree. I think there's some extra hurdles for the smaller school districts.
Maybe those small districts need some assistance up front to try to get them going. One of the issues that has come up in some of the districts is that they can't afford to hire substitutes to come in during the program because they just don't have the resources. That's Senator Bonhoeff. You've been very
thank you, Mr.
patient.
Chair. And Mr. Chair, I agree with you. And as one of the strongest proponents of QCOMP, that has been my biggest frustration, is that it hasn't been equal around the state and the barriers have been insurmountable for districts in your area and in other rural areas to get in this program. And so the thing that I appreciate about the conversation at the Capitol this year is we are actually now saying, if this thing is what it says it is, if it's, you know, really going to transform the culture around, you know, and we really are talking about a management by objective program. We're talking about a pay for performance, which, you know, most industries have gone to many years ago. If we are going to reform the way we do compensation in our classrooms, as well as apply some of the best practices around, you know, teaching teams and collaboration, it ought to be statewide. And then, you know, how do we do that? I've often thought that if it was statewide, we would all be more engaged in solving these problems faster. You know, this program has been around for quite some time and has had some problems. Only just a few of us, you know, have been the ones who have said, you know, our districts are in it, we like this, we don't like that. I think when a person at the table's district isn't part of it, you know, you may not be as engaged in making sure that we're doing the best we can with the program. And so I'm hopeful that the department has some good ideas at really how to make this workable for every district.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Ms. Randall, I know that you mentioned that this program, the QCOMP, is relatively new. And then you made a reference to, you looked at some national data, and that at this point there's no link between professional development, merit pay, and higher student achievement. So I was sort of looking through the book to see where that was listed, and I do see on page 5 that you do reference the TAP program. And I couldn't help but notice that despite the growth of TAP over the past decade, and this is in 14 states and over 200 schools, its effect on student achievement is unclear. Could you give me some more data possibly, or us more data on, you know, other national programs, and if there is, you know, a similarly styled program in other states? Because I look at that, and again, while QCOMP is relatively new, at a time when we have limited dollars, we need to look at some of the research and make data-driven decisions. Any more information or anything else in the report that refers to other programs that we could sort of reference?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, thanks for the question. Page 5, you kind of found where it's really discussed in the report, and you're right, there's not a lot there. There's that study about TAP that we referenced there that says there was a a small positive test score gain associated with TAP at the elementary school level, and then actually a test score decline in grades 6 through 10. The other well-known teacher professional development performance pay program is ProComp, which is in Denver. That's newer than QComp. It started in 2006. There's been, you know, a few studies of that, but they really have limited data as well. They also took 6 years to develop and prepare and implement that program. So they had kind of more ramp-up time, if you will, in implementing that program. So there's ProComp in Denver. There's, you know, again, somewhat similar to program to QComp in Douglas County, Colorado. And then I know Cincinnati had a little bit of a QComp Lite program. But none of these programs are exactly the same as QComp, of course. And we looked through the research pretty extensively and weren't able to find anything that showed really definitive link between those programs and student achievement. But I would also repeat that they're all pretty new.
Senator Salzman?
But just to follow up, if you were saying, Ms. Randall, that they're relatively new, I think that TAP has been around since 1999. So it's the oldest. And sort of the most similar to this. So again, I go back to I'm not seeing any data that shows that QComp is working in terms of addressing student achievement. And specifically, I'll just make a point to the committee again that our achievement gap in Minnesota is totally unacceptable. And how are we, again, targeting dollars to those programs that are most effective, that are going to help us address the future of our state and having an educated workforce? So,
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate all the issues that we have to grapple with here, and I just kind of following up on Senator Bonhoeff's comments, one of the major challenge of this is it has been a changed way of looking things, and none of us necessarily take to change very well. But I think one of the elements of this that's been positive is that it hasn't forced. It's been a carrot rather than a stick. It's been people taking advantage to change some of their relationships, their approach to things that are still aimed at some pretty significant goals. If we believe that improving teachers will help improve student achievement, then there's nothing wrong with what's happened here, even if we don't have the evidence just yet in terms of a matter-of-fact way. And many of the things that Senator Salzman and I have been working on, too, are elements that can, if people see that they make a difference in this kind of an atmosphere, will buy in and implement them. And that becomes a mechanism for them to do it and make that decision, make the, quote, right decision. If we buy into the total, one more thing. One of the goals on that is how we can retain teachers. We have an abysmal record of keeping young teachers in here. There is a connection, I believe, between that and the way in which we manage pay now. So are we going to put, if we abandon this, are we going to put all of our faith back into the belief that every year is the automatic increase really represents some improvement, or taking some more college credits, whether they are relevant to improving you or not, increases your pay? What is that? Are we going to buy? Do we want to abandon? We don't have any evidence that necessarily proves those. So would we abandon something that for younger teachers? I mean, they look at that bottom of that salary schedule. You add percentage increases, who's getting all the money? It's at the top, not at the bottom, and they don't see any hope. But if they, in fact, see that not only through being mentored, have an opportunity to actually grow in their effectiveness as a teacher and have some reward that's connected to that, I think that's an important thing that we ought not to overlook. So when we're talking about who is uncomfortable or who is not, it isn't that we're treating all teachers alike now, because clearly we're not. There's quite a disparity there. It's just that it's on automatic pilot. And so I think we really need to be honest and look at these kinds of things before we jump to conclusions that this does not have the potential of getting closer to some of these goals that we say are important to us, of keeping you know, well-trained teachers that have got excitement, enthusiasm, and that oftentimes are the ones that are let go, much to the chagrin of the parents of the children that are there, and so they end up seeking other options. There's a lot of stuff going on in this system. And, I don't want to see the system sink of its own weight. I'd like to see that we put some things in place, and hopefully, going against all of human behavior is that some of these choices, keeping the goals there, but that some of the choices can be made locally, and that there's enough incentive to, in fact, do that. And I appreciate the barriers you've talked about, and some of the suggestions you've made of how, if it's a critical mass that's the issue, or if there's some other elements that could make this more doable and available to smaller school districts, I think we ought to look at that.
All right. I think one more question, and then I think we need to move on. We have the commissioner, and then also Ms. King from the department. Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate this discussion. I think there have been some very good things brought up, and I just, as I've been hearing these things, just want to recall that this program, we started this in 2005, and this was really the first time, I think, that we have, as a state, tried to link compensation, performance, and funding. And this is a voluntary structure, but it's the first time we've tried to do this. And the results, I think, are not conclusive, saying, boy, this has been an outstanding success at achieving all those things. But it's $49 million a year out of about $7 billion that we spent. And as legitimate as all these questions are about QCOM, we're not asking any of these questions about the rest of the $7 billion that we spent in education. And it would seem to me that if these are valid points, we ought to be asking about everything we're doing. And to me, that raises the question of whether or not there is a potential benefit in trying to link these things together, linking funding, linking performance, linking achievement. And if that makes sense, and I think that I would argue that it makes sense in almost everything else that we do as a society, why wouldn't we want to continue to find ways to make those linkages stronger rather than say, let's diminish it, let's forget about it, and go back to, as Senator Olson said, the way we've done it in the past that has no linkage at all, and we've not even attempted to discover those links. And so I guess I just wanted to make that plea that we not abandon this relatively recent experiment that has been voluntary and say, instead, does it make sense to try to find the connections between compensation, funding, and student performance? And if so, then let's try to strengthen that not only here but in other places as well. And so that's not a question, just more of a comment, but I just wanted to recall us to that this program represents a significant change and departure from what we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm, for one, a little reluctant to give up on it after 4 years and $49 million.
I won't ask what school district you represent.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I represent one of those suburban districts, and I appreciate your point about the rural districts. And I think you have a good point. And I think that there are things that we ought to ask about how can we facilitate this and other programs maybe similar in districts that are not currently participating. And I'm all in favor of that. So I want to go on record as a suburban guy that really has an interest in wanting to see rural districts succeed.
Again, thank you, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall, for the work that the legislative auditor has put into this. And I'd like to invite Commissioner Alice Segrin and actually, it was kind of a surprise that I found out that the department had done their own study on QCOM. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's wonderful to be here with you today. And we do appreciate the discussion that's been going on about QCOMP and the implementation process. We certainly have appreciated working with the legislative auditor. We actually are very supportive of a lot of the recommendations that they have made to us. It reinforces many of the things that we had planned on doing anyway. Just to kind of reinforce the philosophy of QCOM, a lot of discussion has been about and around student academic achievement. others have mentioned, there are other goals for QCOM also. We really wanted to make sure that finally teachers had a way of looking at professional development that was job-embedded just in time around data of their students so that they could look at instructional practices and implement them in an ongoing way. We also wanted to make sure that there was observation and evaluation that was ongoing for continuous professional development and improvement of those teachers. We felt that that was very, very important. As it's mentioned, a lot of times there's this drive-by in-service where you'll have a wonderful author come with their book. You'll get a signed book, and you'll take it back to your room, and never more will you actually implement anything in that wonderful book that the author may have talked about. So professional development is really very, very important, as well as the observation to see whether the instructional practices you want to implement are really working, and you're doing that in a collegial way. And then also we want to provide career opportunities for teachers. When you become a teacher, you're a teacher, you're a teacher, you're a teacher, or you can become a principal. And when I was a parent, I'm still a parent, but when my children were in school, I would be very frustrated with my favorite teacher leaving the classroom and becoming a principal. Because that was the only other career opportunity that they had. And so QComp also provides those opportunities for teachers to stay in the classroom but also take some of their expertise and work with their colleagues to mentor them, to do instructional coaching, to do curriculum development and research. So it provides some other opportunities for our teachers. And then certainly we also want to understand about the student impact as teachers are implementing the professional development that they identify as good professional development and instructional practice. So we really want to remind you that it is a comprehensive plan. There's not one component that is more important than the other, but putting them all together comprehensively, we feel, is going to result in much better student achievement, but also the support the teachers have been asking for a number of years. We also, you know, certainly understand that, and we feel that the professional development has been something that has been identified as a very good positive. We also are appreciative of some of the findings that the auditor made, particularly the 30-day timeline. That has been a concern for us, too. Many of the recommendations are things that we would like to change so that we can have a little bit more controlled process for ourselves as a staff. And certainly some of the other recommendations. Pat King, who is our director of the QCOM program, is going to go through those and kind of walk through through them with you to let you know the response. But we also want to reiterate what the auditor said, too, about the concern of why schools are reluctant to go into QCOM and the expression that they aren't sure that the money will be there. That's why the governor has proposed this year that we go statewide, so that there is an assurance that every district, large or small, will be guaranteed a spot in the QComp program. And, Mr. Chair, I want to assure you that we are just as concerned as you are that we don't have as many small school districts in QComp as the larger school districts. And, in fact, we just had a QComp summit a few days ago where we had over 200 school districts represented, or 200 people. I don't know if it's 200 school districts, but at least 200 people in attendance. And one of the things that we are talking about is how we can help our small school districts participate in QComp. We do have very small charter schools participating in QComp right now with less than 100 students. So if they can do it, we know that our small school districts can. Our staff stands ready to go out to any school district in the state of Minnesota and work with them and provide the support that they need. In fact, our assistant commissioner just leaned over and said, I'll travel all over the state if you want me to help consult and provide the support that these school districts need. So we are very committed to that, and we want to see that all of our school districts are in QComp. And actually, some of the suggestions of the auditor are some of the things that we are also looking at, too. How can you provide some regional support at the same time keeping separate your own school district schedules and things? So with that, I want to let Pat King kind of go over some of the recommendations that we found very helpful and supportive in the report and some of the things that we will be doing in regard to those.
Commissioner, thank you very much. Do you have a copy or a handout on your report?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. Did we bring a...
It's in the back of the book. It's at the very end of the auditor's report.
Oh, the response
yes,
to the auditor.
Right,
okay,
right,
all right.
Right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today to talk about the QCOMP program. I would like to start off by thanking the Office of the Legislative Officer's staff.
Can you move the mic a little closer?
Sure.
Thank you.
For the intense work that and all of their thoughtfulness that went into preparing this report. It really will help us streamline our work at the department. We've known since the beginning, we've been at this for over 3 years, and we've known since the beginning that there are definitely ways that we can make this process more usable, more user-friendly, and probably more efficient at the department. And so this will provide us with some direction that we need to go and save us some of the time of looking into different ways that we can provide efficiencies. And I'm going to start off today by just walking through each of the recommendations and then give you a little bit of a response about the department stand, where we're at, and what we see as the future for QCOMP as these responses are written, or recommendations are written. The first one starts off with looking at developing a process to apply changes in the QCOMP requirements to all participating schools and districts. And we recognize that this has been a concern and it's been an issue. And part of that goes back to the fact that we were developing and implementing a program all at the same time for 3 years. We feel as though now we're in a place where we really understand many of the best practices that need to occur. And because we've got districts that have been in the program that provide us with information, we're in a very good place to make some decisions about what those requirements need to look like. In about 2006, we formed an advisory committee, and you'll see the advisory committee members listed at the back of this report. And the advisory committee, we meet quarterly, and it's made up of educational organizations and school district staff, teachers, administrators who are currently in the program, providing us with direction that we should take in implementing this program. We use their input. We take it very serious, and we've made some decisions about the direction that we've gone with this program based on input from the committee members. So, again, we will be working with the committee to put together a more comprehensive and clearer understanding of the requirements for the program. Recommendation number two, minimum standards in the QCOMP application. We've made some changes over time in order to ensure that we're bringing the program up to the level that it needs to be. I can honestly tell you that one of the very exciting things about having a program in existence for 3 years is that we've actually got information from districts telling us what it is that should be in a program to make this a comprehensive program. So we're using that. We're comparing that to national staff development information, best practice, research. I have staff that's researching different components of QCOMP on a regular basis, and we take that into consideration as we're putting together our rubric. So we will be taking that recommendation seriously. Recommendation number three and number four are both very important to us. It has been very difficult to adhere to the 30-day timeline, and we will receive applications on September 30th with an expectation that it is approved the very next day for implementation. We receive applications December 22nd with the expectation that they will be reviewed and approved by within 30 days. My staff are willing to work on that. The difficulty comes in when we have to recruit members from school districts. They're on vacation, and so we can't convene people until after the Christmas break. And as you can about imagine, in a classroom, the last thing you want to do after Christmas is be out of your classroom. We're also finding it very difficult in a time when there's financial constraints on districts and administrators and teachers, having to pull them out of their classrooms, looking for substitute teachers. And so it also creates an issue or a problem for us in training of individuals and making sure that they have proper training, because we would really like to use the best of the best for peer reviewers for QComp, but the best of the best usually have to stay back at the district, so it becomes a real concern for us to be able to do that. We're looking at number five. If we should retain the use of external reviewers, we will look at ways of efficiency. We're looking at possibly some WebEx kinds of things, making sure information is sent out electronically. And sometimes, even though we send the information out electronically ahead of time with sufficient amount of time, we can't guarantee that the information is always read, because it depends on how much that individual has on his or her plate in order to prepare for a reading that we're going to have. Number six, the use of regional or cooperative programs. I take the recommendation, and I am very serious about ensuring that we have a good representation of both rural and metro schools in Minnesota in the QComp program. Being an individual who grew up in outstate Minnesota, I completely understand what it's like to live out in southwestern Minnesota or northwestern Minnesota and not have the opportunities that you have here in the metro area. Recently, I have been contacted by the Northwest Service Cooperative, the Lakes Country Service Cooperative, and just this morning I got a call from Barb Sakura up in Mille Lacs wanting me to put together a regional training. I have those dates already set to go out. For the last couple of years, we've tried very hard to enlist and provide information to districts in outstate Minnesota, and it's been met with very little interest. And I'm not sure what that is, but it doesn't mean that we haven't gone out and worked with districts independently and individually. I do go out on a regular basis myself and meet with school districts. We use the regional service cooperatives as often as we can. I'm on the phone with districts on a regular basis, but there has been a renewed interest in the program. And though dates are set for northern Minnesota, I am very excited about this because it's something that we've been wanting to do. I've also contacted the rest of the service cooperative directors around Minnesota to let them know that there's an interest in northern Minnesota, and maybe in their part of the state they may want us to come out. It's very easy for the service cooperatives to host a regional forum for superintendents, board members, administrators, teachers to come together, and it's more efficient for us to travel outstate than it is for them to travel to the metro to meet with us, and it's good for us to get out and about. The whole idea of using a regional cooperative program for QComp programs, we think, would be very exciting to explore. I think there could be some challenges, but there could be some real opportunities all at the same time. And the challenges would come in when you have, as stated earlier in the report, QComp is a very unique program, and it really builds on the uniqueness of each individual district. And so when Ms. Randall said that there are 72 different programs out there, there truly are 72 unique programs in Minnesota, and I think that's something that we should all be very proud of, because Minnesota is a unique state in the sense that we can have local control and local design. And so when we look at how this might work collectively within three or four school districts within a region, we would have to look at making sure there's an equality in the sharing of resources, and there are some things that could actually work across districts, such as some of the professional development and some of the career ladder positions may be able to travel back and forth and help with some of this. I think it becomes a little more difficult when you come down to the performance pay areas, because even though you have five districts in northern Minnesota, it doesn't mean that each of the five districts have the same exact student population. And so it's making sure that whatever happens within that particular program, within that district, that we're meeting the needs of that program as well.
Are you meeting with the bargaining units as well as the administration? It sounds as if you're meeting just with the administration.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Actually, the phone calls that I've received and the requests that I've received are from the the districts in the region that want to bring a team of individuals. They want superintendents, they want school board members, and they want teachers, and they want administrators. And so we're really pushing that kind of a collective group to come from a district. We do know that a lot of resistance is met sometimes in districts when you have either just the teachers at the table or just the administrators at the table. We continually encourage districts to have conversations about what it is that they really want out of this program and how they might be able to work together to come up with a collaborative program versus one side or the other, because that seems to be some of the pushback that we've heard from districts when we hear that it's one side or the other. So we work with districts to ensure that it's coming from both sides. Moving on to recommendation number 7, looking at conducting periodic program reviews of all QCOMP participants. This is a recommendation that came out of our advisory committee a couple of years ago, that we look at leveling out the peer review process, because some districts felt it was rather cumbersome to have the department come out. They have to prepare for it first, and the department comes out, and we do a 1 or 2 day, depending on the size of the district, review of the program. The way that the peer review process works is that my staff facilitate the program or the process, and we have reviewers who are implementers, such as teachers or administrators from other school districts, on the team. And we have a rubric that we use. We look at documents that districts may have kept regarding meetings, staff development meetings, hiring of their career letter positions. And we also look at conducting interviews with teachers and administrators in each of the buildings that are implementing. And so what we want to do is really get a good look at how the program is being implemented. The peer review process was really meant to look at how is that district doing as far as implementing their program according to the approval letter that they received, or the plan that was approved by the commissioner. And so rather than looking at each of these districts on a very common basis, we really tailor the review to the actual district's plan. Because we think it's very important, as you have many different types of plans being implemented, that we're not comparing. We want to make sure we compare apples to apples, I guess would be a better way to put it.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. King, sure. To the point on the peer review committees that are formed in for reviewing applications, I believe you said, but you also use them to follow up with a fairly clear recommendation from this audit of not abandoning that process. What do you think would be lost if you did? And is the recommendation for how that would be handled, do you believe can adequately address the objectives you had for using the peer review process? And let me just throw one more option in there. I notice you have an advisory committee. Can the advisory committee address those things and compensate for what might be lost? I would be interested in how you feel about that abandonment of that. You described logistics as being difficult.
Mm-hmm. Ms. King.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I believe that you're referring to the peer review process. I missed the very first part of your question.
Yes.
I'm very sorry, Senator Olson. And I apologize for that. We're not looking at abandoning the peer review process. I think we need to make a clear distinction between, and this is something we went through when we were having our evaluation with the legislative auditor. There's two types of review that go on here. There's the application review, and sometimes we use the term peer review there. And there's also the peer review, which is the on-site review.
So, Mr. Chair, the recommendation from the legislative auditor was to abandon the peer review of the application?
Yes.
But the on-site is to evaluate how it's being implemented?
Exactly.
After it has been approved?
Yes, Senator Romo, exactly. And so what we're looking at, Olson, I'm sorry.
Sorry. That's all right.
That's what happens when you have bifocals.
So
what we're looking at doing is the department's handling of the application process in order to ensure consistency and efficiency. But we really strongly believe in continuing the peer review process. It not only informs the department of how well a program is being implemented or if it's truly being implemented, but it also provides other districts with an opportunity to go in and learn from one another. So we believe that we need to continue. We will continue with the peer review process, the on-site peer review process. It's just we need to bring it up to a higher level and ensure that there's a little more compliance built in with it.
Okay, thank you.
Go on, Ms. King.
Okay, recommendation number 8. Looking at continuing to make the program reviews more consistent. I believe we've already covered that. And explicit compliance component in the program review, we agree with that, and we will be taking all of these pieces back to our advisory committee. I think we have a meeting on February 13th or something close to that. And then looking at recommendation number 10, looking at developing and publishing criteria for evaluating the QCOMP site goals, 10 and 11 really do fit together well. And yes, we recognize that the site goal piece, it's something that has in the last year or so become very very interesting for our staff to work on. We realize that we need to have a better process. We are looking at possibly 3 submission times versus everyone submits their goals all at once, so maybe a June, a July, and an August, or something like that. It becomes a little more difficult sometimes when districts are using the MCAs versus NWEA. And with this particular school-wide goals, as long as a district uses a standardized assessment, they may choose which assessment they want to use. But we would need to look at how we might be able to scatter all of that and set it up so that not only do districts have a better opportunity of sending it them in and get a technical assistance, but we would have better we would be able to provide better technical assistance. And also recommendation number 12, looking at how information in the annual reports is used and making sure that the department actually spends some time really reviewing that. That is an area that we agree that needs to be more we need to make sure that we move that, step that up a little bit, I guess would be a good way to put it, in that we have looked at in the past. We took this to the advisory committee, and it was recommended that we let districts sort of choose how they might want to report back to the department, but we're finding a lot of inconsistencies in that, so therefore we want to move to a more standardized form of reporting back because this particular area provides us with a lot of input on the direction that we should go with the program and how well it's being implemented in districts. And so with that, that concludes my overview.
Okay, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. King. There's so many good things that you said here that it's really hard to tack down to it. Could you give us an oversight of the size of your staff? You know, if this were a program that would go from 44 school districts and 28 charter schools to the entire state, how would you manage the periodic oversight from the department?
Ms. King.
Ms. Rummel, that's a very good question, and I have given that a lot of thought over the last couple of weeks. And my current staff, I have 27 current staff, including myself, and my division oversees far more than just QCOMP, and I could get into that maybe some other day. But with that being said, it's good work and it's important work. The Division of School Improvement, we really look at helping districts understand and align. Not only we align our resources, but helping school districts understand initiatives and resources as well. And so when we look at the QCOMP program and how this might work if we were to go statewide, we would hopefully look at a phase-in model. And we would want to help districts, we would like to help develop a needs assessment for districts to go through to find out whether or not they're truly ready to move to the next step. First, it's a question of, do you want to move to the next step? The second question is, are you ready and do you think this is something that you want to explore? And I think that another way that we might want to look at doing this is going to an electronic application process that might flesh out some of the pieces right up front. And I think it's extremely important to look at efficiencies in any way that we possibly can. And then I would need to make sure that a few more of my staff are trained solely in this in QCOMP. And then also I would like to really consider the use of the regional service cooperatives as a means of maybe working in those specific areas with those specific districts. Because I do know in my other work, in another part of my job, we use the service cooperatives for our AYP services for schools not making adequate yearly progress. And it's been very interesting and very rewarding for us to use those regions because they each part of the state has its own culture, and it's a very unique culture, and it's something that I think we all need to build on. And I would really, I really believe that there's an opportunity here for us to look at regionalizing how we might get this all together and how we might move forward. So there's a lot of ways that I think that we could be very creative in how this could happen. I also think we need to do a lot of discussing with districts and a lot of educating from the department about what this program really is, because I really believe, and from what I hear on a regular basis, not everyone is completely understanding the program. We have information on our website. We send out superintendent emails every so often. We have an email address that districts can use. We do outreach as often as we can. We can only do so much. We have to have people come back and start asking us for information. But I do believe it's doable. I believe we would need a little bit of time to put together a process, and I would sincerely request that if we were to go down this road, that we would be given some time, because I know from 3 years ago having to develop and implement a program all at the same time, it becomes very I think that things could be done a lot better and more efficient. And so given a little bit of time, I think we could do it.
Isn't the governor's proposal to make it a statewide program?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, yes.
Are any of the reductions to the department in the governor's proposal affecting QComp?
Mr. Chair, at this point, we are trying to do as much as we can to maintain our FTE.
But no increase. So there's going to be a train wreck on.
Mr. Chair, I would say that we're going to have some challenges, but I wouldn't say a train wreck.
Okay.
I think that we have a lot of technology that we can rely on. We're using a lot of WebExes or Webinars, those kinds of communication strategies. So a lot of the things that that we initially need to do to get information out, we can do via electronics. We can also use the regional cooperatives, as Pat said. So there are strategies that we can look at. We just completed, as I said, a QComp summit where a lot of information was given out. So we will try to do more group kinds of informational sessions to get the word out and to help as much as we possibly can. Remember, too, we've got a lot of our larger districts already in QComp, and those are probably more complex plans than when you start to get out into the rural areas where you'll have plans that maybe will not be as complex. And once we even have some models out in the rural areas that are good models to work with, we'll probably be able to implement those even more efficiently. And we've got 3 years under our belt. So we know what our application process should look like. We know what good evaluation processes are, what good professional development is. We've got lots of models out there for districts to look at. So we've got a lot of things that are in place now that we didn't have 3 years ago. So I think that's going to really help us quite a bit.
Senator, let's see. I'm sorry. I'm going to follow down the line here. Senator Salzman, and then Senator Dahl and Bonhoeff.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I just noticed that in the appendix after your liking letter, there is a list of all your advisory committee members. And first of all, Commissioner, you and I agree that student achievement is, we both share that we have to do better. So if I sound skeptical about QComp, it's not because I'm not committed to staff development and improving student achievement. But I see this 44-member advisory committee group, and it's very impressive. But I don't see anybody on it who really represents school districts who aren't in QCOP. And so while we're, you know, perhaps listening to people who are in the program, we're not listening to the 300 school districts that aren't, or the 120 charter schools. So I guess that would be one suggestion, is that we should be listening to the people who aren't in the program. And since we have 44 people that you're meeting with regularly to talk about, you know, addressing QCOP, I would ask, what else is the department doing to have this kind of intensive effort to talk to our people on the front line about, is QCOP the best thing that they need in terms of student achievement? Because when I talk to my districts, even those who are in school, in QCOP, and we talk about what do they need to do a better job, and I don't think it's just more money to do the same thing. I think Senator Olson and I have shaken a few things up on that. But are we listening to them about what they might say? This is how I could do things differently. We talk a lot about innovation. Charter schools, is a place for that. So, again, with the dollars that we have, is this where school districts would tell us this is the best place for those dollars, both in terms of state aid and in terms of the property tax levy that some districts are using? And so what kind of efforts are we doing with that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Salzman, I think you kind of expressed some information are talking about how you can use some innovative instructional practices, and how does that fit into QCOMP? Are they separate? Should we be putting more money into RTI? Should we be putting money into this in practice or that in practice? I think what you have with QCOMP is a framework in which all of these instructional practices can flow. So in other words, you could really, under your professional development goals and achievement goals, you could actually start looking at RTI goals where for the elementary area you are setting up some reading expectations and interventions through professional development. So you could start having teams of teachers working together around RTI goals in the elementary, saying, okay, we're going to have X numbers of students that are going to meet these kinds of reading expectations along this continuum. What's exciting about QCOMP is you have teachers then that use some of these instructional practices. You mentioned reading first. Reading first would be an excellent way to put that into your professional development process, and that would be what you would be doing for those years. You would be implementing Reading First using the professional development dollars, the structural dollars that you're getting from QCOMP to support that effort. We have, Reading First, some of the monies have diminished because of the federal issues around that. But you can still use that. So whatever the instructional practices that you're interested in using can be implemented within that framework. Now, you not only have that professional development or the instructional practice that you're using, but now you have the observation, evaluation of that going on all the time, continually throughout your school district. You also have the people in place, the instructional coaches, the people that may need to help follow through on the Reading First that are actually paid now for doing that work. And then at the end of the day, you have that evaluation and you have the assessment and some pay that is going to teachers because they have been implementing, practicing, and showing some gains in student achievement. So it's a framework. It's not about we do professional development this way one day. It's an integrated approach. And so at the middle school, you may have some totally different instructional goals that you want to work on. For example, our math standards have changed. In middle school, math is going to be really different. So for the professional development goals for middle school, it may be to work on curriculum alignment, to work on math goals that are going to kind of change over time, and look at the improvement. And it is about it's about growth, and we do have a growth model now that also can be used. We also have NWEA. It doesn't matter what it is, but it is kind of looking, and QCOMP helps you look at broad, not only the goals of your district, the academic goals, but then looking at the instructional practices that colleagues want to work on and can bring them out of their classrooms to actually do that. Same thing at the high school level. While you have individual courses and you have individual subject areas where math teachers can work together, science teachers can work together, social studies teachers can work together, if, for example, your whole goal is literacy, how a math teacher, how a social studies teacher, how an English teacher can all support the literacy goals of that school district becomes a really exciting and kind of transformational process, because now you can, and also you can start having high school teachers talking to middle school teachers and middle school teachers talking to elementary teachers, and you have also this transitional opportunity to say what is happening at each one of these levels and how are we supporting one another, and even setting goals across across grade levels. So the possibilities are limitless of how QComp can go. And it isn't just about, I think people have focused a lot on merit pay, and it's almost an inflammatory term. QComp is so much more than the performance component. When we are out in the school districts, we talk about, and the fear that was first brought up that this was going to be a competitive process has not come to fruition. What has happened is we have a very collaborative process where teachers are problem solving around the needs of their students, and that's what is the strength of QComp, and it's why we really feel that it needs to go forward. When you look at top performing countries in the world, what they do is recruit the very best and the brightest. They pay them a wonderful starting salary so that they're competitive with the rest of the private sector in their countries, and then they continually professionally develop them all throughout their career, and they provide that just-in-time job-embedded professional development and evaluation. You can't have one without the other. You've got to have them both so you have the feedback. I get it every day as a commissioner, believe me, on my job. That's kind of the excitement about it, and I get passionate, and I'll be quiet.
Can I just jump in, kind of piggyback on Senator Saltzman's question on the those school districts that are currently in the QComp program, how do those districts, and maybe Ms. King knows the answer, how do those districts spend their 2% set aside for staff development? Do they just roll that into and add it to the QComp, or do they just kind of do, is that a separate?
Mr. Chair, very good question. The 2% set-aside, we encourage, and the legislation encourages, districts to use the 2% set-aside in collaboration with QComp so that it dovetails and it's all one. We find sometimes districts choose to run a separate staff development program with their QComp program, and they end up going down this road of it's very difficult and they're having a hard time. The peer review process that we hold on an annual basis helps with that, because we help them understand how this could all be woven together. And so we've got districts who use the 2% set aside intentionally to enhance their QComp program because it is really professional development. We do have some districts who choose to waive the 2% set aside and use only QComp. So it looks a little bit different in each district. Sometimes they waive it all, sometimes they waive a portion of it. And so it looks very different in each of the districts. And so we encourage districts on a regular basis to use the 2% along with their QComp program.
Mr. Chair, regardless of what they do, what we encourage with QComp is that all of their professional development for all of their staff be aligned, and so you're all going in the same direction. It's very counterproductive to have some professional goals over here that are not aligned with your school-wide goals. It just makes much more sense. So regardless, our position is that you should have an alignment with all your professional development towards the goals and needs of your students.
Okay. We've got roughly 15 minutes left, and I would like to get into a couple of other issues here. But Senator Dahl, you've been waiting very patiently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just maybe a little bit where Senator Saltzman was going. When I think about all the things that affected student achievement and closing the achievement gap, when I think of those things, at the top of my list, it doesn't seem like teacher quality or professional development is the one thing we're missing. Seems to me there are a bunch of other things that seem to be more important. I would stack Northfield teachers against any teachers in the state or even the nation. I think also our professional development, staff development that we're doing, we are not a QCOMP school, but we do early release, late starts with professional learning communities tied to goals with data-driven collaboration, and we're doing that without this extra money. And when I think about the amount of money that we're thinking of putting into QCOMP, I also think about, doesn't the Department of Education have a wish list of things they would rather fund first that might really have data that shows improves the achievement gap, such as funding all-day kindergarten, early childhood programs, remediation after-school programs, or even smaller class sizes? Seems to me those things might have a more immediate effect or impact in terms of the dollars spent, and those are things that we maybe know work already.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, well, I would welcome Northfield into the QCOM program. If you're doing it already, you should just come on in because you will receive some additional money so that you can continue implementing what you're doing. I think you really illustrate the point that Northfield does believe in a QCOM framework. In regard to some of the issues that you've listed, class size reduction, while class size reduction has some impact upon whether you can achieve, it has been shown that it doesn't have as much of an impact as a quality teacher in the classroom. I, too, believe that our teachers in Minnesota are high-quality teachers. But what we need to do with them is to make sure that they are continually supported. Right now, many teachers are very isolated in their classroom and do not have the opportunity to really work together and collaborate. And I think that's one of the beauties of QCOMP is that it does allow that kind of collaboration, and I applaud Northfield for the opportunities that they have given their teachers. Many school districts do not have those opportunities, however, for their teachers. Yes, there are many other things that we can do, but I think, first of all, you got to get the fundamentals right, and frankly, we're going to be losing a lot of teachers to retirement within the next 10 years. About 40% of our workforce is going to be gone, and this gives us an opportunity, frankly, to make sure that the teachers that are coming in are going to be supported and professionally developed as young teachers and attract and retain them for the future, because we also know that many of our teachers leave after about 5 years. About 30% of our workforce leaves before they even get their feet wet.
But isn't Senator Dahl your point? Money is fungible. I mean, you can only spend that dollar once, and that was, you know, do you put that money in early childhood or do you put it in staff development? We have some money in staff development through the 2% set aside. Might not be enough, more than likely isn't enough. And the point I was going to bring up or say is that, you know, we asked the legislative auditor to do this over the interim. And then I just found out, I think it was just a day or so ago, that the department spent, you know, a fairly sizable amount of money on a separate QCOMP report outside of the legislative auditor's report and spent, what, $200,000 or more on that when money is tight and everything?
Mr. Chair, there has been concern about the outside evaluation that we did contract for. We had intended to do that for a number of months, and then about the same time that we went out for the RFP, it was determined that the auditor was going to also be doing an independent evaluation. Frankly, I feel like I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't, because we also get a lot of criticism that we're not having outside evaluators looking at our programs to see if they're effective. So we really knew that there was concern about the QCOMP program, and we wanted to go through an RFP process and actually hire an outside evaluator to help us with that, to really see if we were missing things. Now, we also really respect Mr. Nobles and Jim came to us and said, geez, Alice, we're doing this and you're doing this. And we said, you know, there was no conflict. And what has turned out is that we actually have complimentary reports. We hope that we can share the report. We actually asked Mr. Nobles to work with our independent evaluator so that we were not duplicating the same information, that we were not causing undue burdens and asking the same questions twice to people that were in QComp. And so I think that Mr. Nobles would agree that, you know, there was no intent to duplicate effort, but that we had always planned on doing something, and it, as it turned out, it kind of all came together at the same time where we, you know, were going to have a contract for this independent evaluator, and then the auditor was working with us too. So we combined forces, and I think the HESL report will allow us to go into some other areas. We also intended that this would be an ongoing evaluation, that we would periodically bring people back in, an independent evaluator, to make sure that we were, as I said, making sure that we're doing the right things, that we're not missing things as we're going forward with the program. So it was federal money. We felt like it was a wise expenditure of money. We do take our charge seriously, that we are doing work that is good and that we want to also have outside evaluation of it. We really appreciate, and I think we told you today that we really respect the work that Mr. Noble's crew did. All of their recommendations were spot on. We feel like we are going to be implementing them. We have no qualm about any of the things that they've said, and we hope that the HESL report will also help us as we're making decisions. So there was never an intent to spend money foolishly. We were trying to do it wisely and to make sure that we also had the information that we needed. We didn't know what the HESL report was going to say either, and so it has some interesting observations that we'd love to share with you too.
Senator Clark.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Segrin, I know how excited and enthusiastic you are on this topic, and I think our state's really lucky that you care so much about our kids and are trying to figure this out. So I too am concerned about this particular overlaying, or it does feel duplicative. It sounds like a lot of the same topics were addressed, and when you look at, I mean, I think you're familiar with the fact that we had a fairly large reduction in technical and outside contracts this last year because of our budget situation. And I guess what kind of struck me was is that this was encumbered at the end of August. It was moving forward in September. So obviously this other process was going on. And not trying to sound like I'm baiting you, because I'm not, but I do think when we're looking at such a big budget shortfall, and since this is overlapping and complementary, there, in a memo that came out from Mr. Showalter, the state budget director, one of the things that he's telling us is that agencies, quote unquote, were directed to take the reductions to the extent possible from planned spending on professional technical contracts. If agencies were not able to reduce professional technical contract spending in the amount of the allocation, they reduced non-contract spending for the remainder as required by law. I'm just concerned about a couple $100,000. In this kind of a situation, and especially with the reduction there, and there probably could have been, maybe this money could have been used to try to help some other entities come in. The timing just, I just have some real concerns about that. I don't know if you can address how the decision was made to go forward, given that, that this was going, we had the auditor's one, which was independent, and in light of the instruction to please be relooking at what you're contracting out on.
Mr. Chair and Senator Clark, this was not state money that was used, and the direction with Mr. Showalter was to look at our state appropriations and not go forward with any professional contracts. We used federal money, which we are allowed to use, and we felt it was very important to have an independent evaluation. And as I said, we had thought about this before. We had no thought that it was going to be redundant, or that we were trying to do something repetitive to the legislative auditor's work. And in fact, when Mr. Nobles sent the letter out to you all and talked to us about it, I felt personally very bad. I felt like that he was charging us with questioning his independence, and I felt terrible. It was not at all intended to be that way. We really wanted to do an independent evaluation, and when he pointed that out, we said, well, let's make sure then that we're not doing any kind of redundant evaluation, but that we can also get some additional information that will actually complement what the legislative auditor was doing. So we, you know, in response to his concerns, which we were, you know, just really, you know, concerned about, we tried to then, you know, make sure that the evaluation that we went forward with was going to also reflect some of the other things that we wanted to look at that we were going to possibly hold off on because we didn't have enough of a, you know, monies to do that.
Senator Bonhoff. Senator Bonhoff, do you still have a, remember your question?
I do, Mr. Chair, but if, as I stepped out to meet with somebody, if somebody else asked it, I apologize. My question is, Commissioner, do you plan to come before the committee and discuss how you envision QComp rolling out statewide in terms of, you know, there's an application process, if it's everybody has to, how does that change? What really do you think a statewide QComp would look like? What would be different? What would be similar? What, you know, how would you take what you've learned and recommend changing it? It seems to me that we're talking about something that is pretty all-encompassing and that ought to be really discussed, reviewed, analyzed.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, yes, we plan when the governor's bill is ready that we'll be back here, hopefully, and talking about how it would be rolled out.
Thank you.
Do you know when the actual bill would be ready?
Mr. Chair, we're hoping by the end of the week.
Okay, thank you.
Perhaps
Senator
Monday.
Senator Olson's gone. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, just if you can briefly just comment on this rollout that the governor is anticipating. It's been described as mandatory, but I've also heard that that's really a misnomer. Can you just comment on the mandatory nature of this, or is it still going to be essentially voluntary with some emphasis on trying to encourage participation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, we anticipate that it will take some time for districts to fill out their application, get their process going. Some districts are probably, as Senator Dahl talked about, Northfield, that probably has a lot of the components in place and are doing them already. So an application from Northfield might be really ready to go fairly quickly, whereas maybe another school district that hasn't even talked about professional learning communities or any kind of coordinated professional development might take more time to develop an application. So we're anticipating that it'll be a period of time as QComp is implemented that it will take time depending on where districts are at with the different components. So the way it's set up is that it will be ramping up.
Senator Terizri.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, in this presentation that we that you're going to give to us for the legislation, I am very interested in three aspects of this. I think that Senator Olson's comments about the importance of investing in training and supporting our teachers were very good, and I fully support that. I think that we need to do whatever it takes to invest in training and education of our teachers, supporting the networks, all of these concepts that you talk about. I don't think that I could argue with that at all, and that if we had the money, I would fully support the investment. I think what I need from you is I need to hear what is the link very specifically between that and student achievement. And then I need to hear why you think, in your professional perspective and from the people you consulted with, that the state of Minnesota needs to make this a priority. And I would like to have that compared to other issues. So, again, I'm not arguing that this should not be done and that it is not important. As a legislator, I think what I'm trying to figure out is where do we start and why do we start there? So we argue about early childhood education and the importance of investing. We argue about class size, all of these aspects that people have identified as key issues in education. And you're coming to argue that QComp is one of those and that you're asking us to support it with funding. And so I would really appreciate if you could bring that to us.
All right. Mr. Chair, I will just make a couple of comments, and I appreciate your support of investing in training in teachers. There is clear research that if you have a highly effective, highly qualified teacher in the classroom, they do impact student achievement. There's been lots of research done where you have, if you have a student that enters a teacher's classroom and they're not an effective teacher, and they have the same type of ineffective teacher for 2 years or more, and they have been a typical student on a trajectory of success, that and their academic achievement falls, that they never recover. Never regain the trajectory that they were on. So there is clear research. I can get you stacks of research on making sure that we have highly effective teachers in the classroom. That is number one. That is the biggest fundamental that we need to get right, and that is why QComp is so important, and that is why I support it. It is all about the teacher and having a highly skilled teacher in the classroom. We can have class size of 15 to 1, and if we have a poorly trained, ineffective teacher in that classroom, it makes no difference about the class size. You must have a highly effective teacher in the classroom, and that's what this is all about. It's helping them come together in a continual way to support them, getting highly qualified candidates in, and then continually developing them and supporting them all the way through their career.
Commissioner, if you could pick out like one document, maybe you could share it with us. You could give it to my office, and I'd share it with the committee members. And I want to sneak in the last question, if possible. Senator Fulby, you've been patiently waiting, too, and if you could quickly ask your question before we...
It's actually more of a comment, Mr. Chair, and being one of the greater Minnesota senators around the table. I came in here very, I'm on the fence with this because I was on a school board for 8 years in Princeton, and Princeton currently has a very successful QComp, has implemented the program, and I have seen a staff that grappled with staff development and where do we go and how do we align, and I've seen incredible leaps with our staff in Princeton, and we are a larger school, 3,000. My struggle was I represent 11 school districts, and out of the 11, this is the only one that has been able to. Others have tried, but they've never made it through the hoops, the paperwork. So speaking on behalf of Greater Minnesota, I now am optimistic hearing that Superintendent Zakryshek from Malacca has gotten a hold of you, because we've talked about this, and the regional service co-ops, that way of making sure. For me, I would have to see how this is going to benefit Greater Minnesota, because right now it doesn't, and that's just black and white on the map. So I had a real issue with it, hearing it with Governor Pawlenty's budget, that my 10 schools need to be the blocks that are in the way for them, whatever they are. We need to address that. So I thank you for the presentation.
Mr. Chair, I do have a story to tell Senator Fulby. We have some rental property out in the Malacca area, and a young couple with two children were considering renting this property, and they asked, is it in the Princeton School District? And we said, no, not that there's anything wrong with Malacca, but they love their Princeton School District, and so we couldn't rent our property because it wasn't in the Princeton School District. So they're obviously doing some good things, because that family didn't want to move.
Well, members and Commissioner, thank you, and Ms. King, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we had a good discussion. I wish we had the other report before us, too, but we'll probably be able to see that at a later date.
Yes, we will.
And we'll meet again next Tuesday. So Thank you for your attendance. Committee is adjourned.
Very good.